Everything's okay now, I'm sure. I'll play this back just to be sure. All right, we're going now and we're recording. These questions perhaps don't totally relate, but I wanted to ask you about your grandparents. That goes way back, and the logic for talking about your grandparents is things you heard from them will take us maybe 20, 30, 40 years on into their life, which allows us to reach back as far as we can. You have no recollection of?
I knew my grandmother that we lived next door to, but I'm from Savannah, Georgia.
Okay.
And she didn't live very long after I was born. But all I remember about her was that, you know, she was Grandma Kate.
Okay.
And gave us candy or good cookies and good stuff to eat. And, just told us what to do if we were doing something out of order, which with little things like in the family, you know, if we were doing cutting up or do anything else, she would remind us not to do that.
Okay.
But I don't remember anything else.
Was that on your mother's side?
That's on my father's side. On my mother's side, I don't remember her at all.
Okay. And you say that grandmother you do remember died when you were a young girl.
Very young.
So this will eliminate some of the questions I have here. How about your parents? They were also, were you born in Savannah?
I was born in Savannah.
Okay. Were they also from Savannah, or did they come from somewhere else?
My mother came from Wildwood, Florida, from Wildwood to Macon, and from Macon to Savannah.
Okay.
And my father came from, I don't know where he came from originally. Yeah. I think he might have been from the out islands, because he taught on an island called Skidaway Island, which is right off from Savannah.
Yes.
For a long time. And of course we lived on Isle of Hope, which is very near the ocean, between the ocean itself and Savannah, a suburban area of Savannah. I think his family originally came from South Carolina.
Okay.
But he was raised in Skidaway.
Okay.
And he taught school over there. I don't know too much about my father's people or my mother's people either. And I regret that.
Was that because you moved away from home early, or did they pass early, or?
Neither. It's because when I came along, they didn't talk to children about families. They didn't do any genealogy, and they didn't sit down and talk to children about anything that was grown up. So we didn't learn too much about our family, our ancestors. You know.
Okay. How many children did your parents have?
My parents had 8 children in all. My mother was married twice.
Okay.
She had 5 children, about Gaucher, and 3 children, Jackson. I was the oldest, Jackson. And my father, I'm talking about Frank Jackson, my father.
Okay.
But we came up as one family. There was no separation in the children.
So. Okay. And you say your dad taught? He was a teacher?
He was a teacher, but, you know, it was not organized like it is today. He taught a one-room school on an island. It was an isolated island, a Skidaway, that black people inhabited, and he was the teacher over there.
Okay.
The teacher, you know.
Okay.
Taught everything.
How about your mother? Did she, other than raising a family, which is a big job, did she do anything to earn money?
Well, she worked for Judge Rook, which was the county judge in Savannah, who had a sister who was sort of an invalid, and my mother took care of her.
A domestic work for
domestic
his, yeah,
work
okay.
For,
okay.
When we were up, big enough to take care of ourselves at home and take care of the home.
Okay. Do you remember discussions on the part of your mother and father about race relations? Did they ever talk about that?
We never discussed race relations. We lived it. Next door to us was a white family named Waite.
Okay.
The Waite family, and there were a lot of boys that they would come to the back of to the adjoining fence and play and fight. And we had a great big empty space on somebody's property where they had a ball diamond and all. There was no within the compound, which I'm calling the compound, within the community, there was no separation of the race. But outside of that community, we went our separate ways.
I see.
But we never discussed any of that.
Yeah.
When my mother was ill with the flu, Mrs. Waite would come over and take care of us and bring soup and this and that.
Uh-huh.
And when she was ill with whatever,
sure,
my mother would
Do the same thing.
That's the way that was.
It sounds like a very happy little...
It was a happy...
Yes.
It was a happy place.
Uh-huh.
We worked for whatever, babysat or whatever we did for the rich people who had the money. And the only separation was they had the money and we didn't have the money.
Didn't have the money.
But then we were in and out of the houses and just a part of the community. There was no white supremacy or anything like that.
Okay. How about your parents' education?
Well, I don't know how far my father went. You know, he could have been teaching with an eighth grade diploma. I don't know. And my mother, I don't know how far she went in school either.
Okay.
I had an aunt who finished college and taught school.
Okay. Could they both read, Francis?
Oh, yes, they could read. Yeah.
Then they had a good basic education.
Yes.
Was there anyone in your mother or father's family in the military during those days? We had World War I from 1916, 1917, 1918.
No, they're not.
Okay. Talk to me about the memories of your mother and your father. Tell me a little bit about how you remember them.
Well, my mother was a loving mother. She, her children could do no wrong. Whatever wrong they did, they could do no wrong. Each one of us was spoiled to the fact that whatever you did, she was right there. She was a loving mother.
Uh-huh.
Careful. My father was a carefree, jolly, happy man, all the time happy. And today, right now, my sister and I talk about, when we remember them, we talk about something but daddy said, or mother said. My daddy always told us this. He always told us these cliches.
Uh-huh.
And he was a good provider. He was a carpenter when we came up. And he would have to go where the jobs were.
Sure.
So he would be home every weekend. And he would always bring something good to eat, at least, for us. He also was a fisherman. That was his sport. So he would go out in a little battle and stay out there all day and worry us to death and then come back with nothing sometimes. But then when he did have a catch, he would divide it with the whole community.
Uh-huh.
But he was a very loving, jolly man. Happy person.
Wonderful. That's a nice environment to grow up in.
Yes, right.
Where did you all go to church?
My daddy was a Baptist and my mother was a Methodist. And there was a little Baptist church on the island. And so we would go there to participate in their program. And there was a Methodist church on and we would go there and participate in that program. So all the children in the community, if they were going to have a special program, all the children would participate in the Baptist church, and then on another time, all the children would participate in the Methodist church. So, but then we were Methodists. Okay. We went to the Methodist church because that's where my mother always sent us on Sunday.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But then after we grew up, there was the Catholic bishop's house was very near us, and it was Villa Marie. Dan Roach had gone to Villa Marie at one time.
Okay.
And the Catholic priests would really have a program for all the children in the community and converted quite a few of us, of them. They never converted me, but then I had brothers. Uh-huh. I had brothers who were Catholic.
I see, sure.
And that was wonderful. And well, I knew a lot about the Catholic Church because they are good teachers,
yes.
Very
oh,
good
yes,
teachers.
Oh, yes, they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. This may be a repetitive question, but did your family ever talk about the Civil War or Reconstruction or the Black codes, which were so depressing for Black people?
Mm-mm.
No? Okay. Did your folks vote?
Oh, yeah.
Did, do you know, did they pay? I probably had to pay poll taxes. And.
Well, I guess so.
You never heard any discussion about harassments relating to being able to vote?
No.
Such things as literacy tests and...
No.
Okay, they voted though. No. That's good. Okay. How did you, when you were young, how did you receive your health care?
Health care? When we were sick, we had a family doctor, Dr. Dunn.
Was he Black or white?
No, he was white.
White, okay.
And when we had our tonsils out, it was through the school.
Okay.
The school nurse, that was public health,
okay.
Public health nurse. My sister needed her tonsils out, and I had to go have mine out so that I could be with her.
Well, I can understand that, because you were a close family.
Yeah, we were very, very, yeah. Very close. It was a close, wonderful place to grow up at that time. You know, we didn't feel any integration, any
segregation, yes.
Except when we were out of the community.
Uh-huh.
And so then, it really didn't matter, you know?
Yeah.
We
did you ever talk about it, though? You obviously mentioned when you were out of the, you used the word compound, when you were out, that was the segregated world.
Mm-hmm.
Did you and your folks, or you and your brothers and sisters, talk about that? Did it bother you at all?
Never bothered us, because we were so close to the weights and to everybody else. It was just like other playmates, other people.
Another world out
and
there.
And another world out there.
Yeah.
And so we accepted the other world.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Without even worrying about it.
Okay. Were you able to take vacations, and if so, where did you go?
No, we didn't take vacations. Well, no, we didn't take vacations, but our father would ride us to the island and show, you know, and introduced us to that. We didn't live on that island. We lived on Isle of Hope. So he would take us to Skidaway Island and introduce us to people over there and all of that. And
that was part of the segregated world, though, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't, because this were all Black people.
Okay.
And we would have to ride in a boat battle, which was fun.
Yes.
One of my brothers, when he grew up, he had it belonged to my dad, I don't know which, Model T Ford.
Okay.
And on Sundays, we would take a ride after church. Sunday, you know, go to church, Sunday school and church, and come back and take a ride in the afternoon in this Model T. We did that every Sunday, some new place out from where we lived.
Lived.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
Which was wonderful, but we never took vacations.
Okay. I want to come back to healthcare for a moment. Were all the children born at home?
No,
were you born at home?
I don't know where the Gauchers were born, in Savannah, but I don't know whether they were born at home or not, the older children. But the younger ones, except the very last one, was born in the hospital.
I see. Yeah. Except the very last one.
Uh-huh.
And that was born at home? I understand the very last one was the youngest child then,
uh-huh,
in the family, and that child was born at home or not?
No.
Born in the hospital?
Born in the hospital.
Oh, the last one was born in the hospital. The others
were born at home. Yes.
Okay.
With the midwife.
Okay. Did you feel that the law protected you? Did you have concerns about the law when you were a child?
Not necessarily the law, but individual people who were. For instance, we had to ride the trolley car from where I lived to the high school. This was high school, you know, where everything mattered. And during segregation, the blacks had to sit in the back of the
trolley,
of the car. And the conductor would always just wait until everybody, but we were pushing and shoving to get to the seats because the white children, this was outside of the community,
mm-hmm,
the white children that we didn't know and the lot, they would take the seats to the back, take most of the seats at the back, you know, and we'd have to get them, sit in back of them, and that may not be enough seating for all of us, and we'd have to push and all children
yes,
push and shove to try to get a seat.
Uh-huh.
And he would just stand there and wait till we do it. He didn't take any sides or anything. And I thought, after I grew up and looked back on it, I thought it was wonderful that he stayed out of it.
Yes, yes. It's interesting. I spent some time in New Orleans on this subject, and they had what they call movable screens. Depending upon the number of whites or blacks, they'd move the screen.
Mm-hmm.
So the separate sections were bigger or smaller,
mm-hmm,
according to the needs.
Mm-hmm.
And oftentimes the conductor was very authoritative, and usually that would be a prejudiced person.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, this man was not, he had no...
He didn't show it.
He didn't show it at all.
Did you have movable screens?
No,
there was
movable screens, just pushing and shoving.
Yeah. Okay. When you were young, did you read? And if so, what did you read?
Oh, everything.
Uh-huh.
Oh, gosh, I was a kid of just reading instead of doing what I'm supposed to do, sweeping,
uh-huh,
and dusting.
Uh-huh.
I just read everything I could, uh-huh, get my hands on, anything.
Do you remember reading black newspapers?
No.
No? Okay.
Yeah, after, you know, we had a weekly newspaper, the Tribune, and when I was like maybe in high school, junior high or something, we read the Tribune, you know, we had a subscription to the Tribune. And
was that a Savannah paper for blacks and whites, or was it a black?
We had Savannah Morning News that had a section for what was happening to the black people.
Okay.
But the Tribune was a black newspaper.
It was a black newspaper,
mm-hmm,
published in Savannah.
In Savannah,
yeah, okay.
Yes.
All right.
Savannah Tribune.
Okay. When did you come to Fernandina?
I came to Fernandina in 1950.
Okay.
My husband, we were married in 1947. Now, he was in the Army.
That's Horace.
Horace,
okay.
And so he had not finished his BA when we married. So, and he was from Pelham, Georgia,
okay,
which is very near
Savannah?
No. Tallahassee.
Tallahassee. Oh, okay.
60 miles from Tallahassee. Okay. We stayed in Savannah a year, and he went to Savannah State College, but he didn't like it very much. And he had gone to Florida A&M, so he wanted to go back to Florida A&M. So mm-hmm. we moved to Tallahassee, and he finished in 50. That's when he finished.
Okay.
And then the first, he had two job offers, one in Tampa and one in Fernandina Beach. Well, the one in Tampa was little children, and he didn't want to do that. He was industrial arts, and he wanted a vocational unit. So he was promised a vocational unit. He came here and started the shop at Peck High School.
Okay.
He was promised a vocational unit, but he didn't get it.
Okay.
That
was 1950?
1950.
Okay.
And they brought one in, but Bean got it. What was his name? I forgot Bean's name. That was the industrial arts teacher at the white school. And so, since he didn't get that, he wanted to teach boys how to make a living rather than okay. just a industrial arts shop making
yes.
things.
Okay.
So we were here about 3 years, I think, when they were going to put in a business unit. And he decided that he was going to switch over to the business unit because he was unhappy with the industrial arts unit. And so he took over the business department.
Okay.
And he was the first one, you know, he developed the business department.
And that was at Peck? At Peck, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Backing up for a moment, were you and Horace married in Savannah?
No. At the time, in 47, I taught in Savannah. I was a teacher, okay. I taught in Savannah, and I was working on my master's. And what I had to go to Columbia, went to Columbia in New York. And my sister was already out and gone, and she lived in Baltimore. So, what I had met Horace early on, so I knew him. But in 47, during my vacation, he came up to New York, and we just did all kinds of things in Central Park and just to New York and uh-huh. Broadway and up and down and all. And another couple was going to get married with a friend. Going down to Baltimore to get married.
Uh-huh.
So then we said, let's go and get married. Somebody said, well, why don't you make it a twosome?
Double wedding.
Double wedding. That's
uh-huh.
what we did.
Uh-huh.
And so
wonderful.
We went down where my sister was,
uh-huh.
got married in Baltimore.
Uh-huh.
But we came back and lived in Savannah for a year.
And then Horace went to back to Florida.
Okay. Yeah, I resigned and went to Florida and got a job in the nearby county, Quincy.
Yeah.
Gadsden County.
Yes.
Because first I taught at Chattahoochee.
Okay.
And while he was studying, and so when he finished, that's when we came over here.
Okay, and then he got started what he really wanted to do in Peck.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yes.
Did you and Horace have children?
Yeah. One, John.
One? John,
after 9 years.
I never heard you talk about John.
About John?
No.
Oh, John is my love and joy.
Well, I bet you. tell me a little bit about John.
Well.
When was he born?
He was born in 1956, and we just thought we weren't going to have any. And we wanted a child. We were really the worst if we wanted a child. And, we had a friend who worked at the Humphreys Hospital.
Okay, yes.
And one day there was some twins were born there. And Estelle called me and told me, well, Francis, there's some new twins born over there at Humphreys. So she said, and the mother can't keep them. She's going to have to give them away. So why don't you, we were friends, we were offering. Why don't you take them on? So I thought, I got all excited, and when Horace came home, I asked him as if they were dolls, if I could have these children. He didn't care. So I called my friend who worked at the hospital. She was a nurse. Told all about these twins, and she said, "Francis, you don't want those twins. The mother was an alcoholic, and lived right here. And if you want her on your doorstep every time you turn around." Yes. You know,
it was good advice.
It was very good advice.
Yes.
So she burst my bubble.
Oh, no. That's too
but
bad.
Then after 9 years, John came along.
Okay.
And so,
now where is John now?
John right now lives in Atlanta.
Okay.
He lived for a long time in Fairfield, Iowa. John didn't come to the public schools here because he came through Peck. He went to school with Horace when he was little. He didn't go out to Yulee with me. He went with Horace. And he did from first through third or fourth or whatever at Peck High School. And then when they integrated the schools, he went to MLA for a year.
Okay.
And then we had a friend from who lived in Nashville, Tennessee, who knew the Reynolds lady. Then he knew about, what was her name? I forgot. But anyhow, she was doing a grant. She had thousands of dollars, maybe millions of dollars. One of the Reynolds, tobacco Reynolds.
Okay.
She was unhappy with what private schools did to her nephew or something. And she decided that she was going to educate, I forgot how many boys, black boys. A number of black boys who were smart enough to go to. So she paid tuition for, and I don't remember the number of boys, but then what the boys had to do was to pass the SAT and excel in school and you know, be able to succeed in school. And this friend of mine told us how to apply for this grant, for this scholarship, for this. And John was in 8th grade, I think, then. And one of the schools that honored this scholarship was St. Andrews in Boca Raton.
Okay.
So we went down and interviewed the head and talked with the headmaster and got all the papers, and John had to come back and take the principal of the junior high school here, Bob Stover, gave him the test, the SAT test, and he passed. He had to be, he had to make a certain score, I forgot, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he passed and he got the scholarship, and this lady paid his tuition, which was in the $4,000 at that way back there.
A lot of money.
That we couldn't afford,
yeah.
You know. But he passed, and he went to Boca Raton for all those years, St. Andrews, so he finished St. Andrews. And then, after he finished St. Andrews, of course, you know, he was eligible for any Ivy League school. He wanted to go to Stanford. So he applied to all these schools, Harvard and Yale and Brown and Stanford and all. And he was accepted in all of them. He didn't apply to Florida at all. He was accepted in all of them except Stanford. Stanford had a quota, and the quota was filled. And Rubin told him that his credentials were fine, but the quota was filled, and that they could take him the next year. But he wanted to you know, go right from high school right into college, so he chose Harvard.
Wonderful. So, did he graduate from Harvard?
Oh yeah.
With what, Francis?
Graduated from Harvard, And then he decided, well, he worked his first year out of high school. He worked at the plantation because it was new. And he worked in the personnel department. And they liked what they saw in him. And
this was after Harvard?
No, before.
Before Harvard, okay.
And they were going to make a lawyer out of him. So he was saying, I want to be a corporate lawyer. But after working a summer at the plantation and all those people were talking money, that was too much for him. He wanted to do more than just talk money all the time. So then he decided that he was not going to be a corporate lawyer. That's what he was room for.
Mm-hmm.
And so when he finished Harvard.
What was his major at Harvard? What?
His major was economics. They called that economics.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, he's a good student. You know, he was fine in that sense.
Mm-hmm.
But he worked in the computer lab at Harvard. And he went to the University of Michigan. For law, he was going to be a lawyer, but he didn't know what kind of lawyer it was going to be. Not any kind except a corporate law. And he got his JD, but by that time at Michigan, he also worked in the computer lab. And so he got a job at a computer corporation right there in Ann Arbor, and so he never did.
He never really came back home then, did he?
No. No.
I was, before I lose the thought, you mentioned he didn't want to go to the Florida schools. Was there a reason he gave you for that?
Yeah, well, it was home, I think. I think he wanted to venture out because he wanted to go to California. And I didn't want to go to California. So all I did was, I didn't tell him I didn't want him to go. He was too far away from home. And the hippies, you know, California,
yes.
Oh boy, I didn't want him in that hippie environment. And so I was happy when he got this letter saying they couldn't take him.
Were there any problems in the community that would bother an exciting, intelligent young black lad? Was he sensitive to segregation or any of those kinds of problems?
If he didn't show. After he was grown and all, he knew about segregation, but he never did complain about any segregation. I don't think he came too much in contact with segregated with segregation as such, because we were always Episcopalians and we went to the black church until we were integrated, and he had no trouble with the youth here. One time Helen Joyce Love, they had Youth Sunday, and Clyde will tell you right now about John. They had nobody to play for the choir, and John played for the choir, and they all played. They all talked about it. John played so fast they couldn't sing. He played music as such,
uh-huh.
John was a sort of devilish kind of somebody, and he played, instead of playing the hymns for them, he played classical gas on the pipe organ, and so. They all liked him. He had no that kind uh-huh. of problem, uh-huh. Except maybe at the beginning of segregation, when he went to Emma Love, he was the only black child in the whole room, and the teacher sat him in the back and that kind of thing. He might have, in fifth grade, he might have felt, but he didn't.
He never really talked about it.
No.
Can we talk a little bit about the Good Shepherd? You mentioned that. I've heard it was referred to as the little church down the hill.
Yeah, Father Gray, who, I love Father,
yes,
Father Gray, so. We called it a little church down the hill because he had to come from, come down the hill.
The big church up the hill.
Yeah, big church up the hill, down the hill at 9 o'clock, you know, 8 o'clock or whenever. Uh-huh. I think the first mass was 8 o'clock and he had to come down 9 o'clock. There were ladies who would come down and help with the special programs. And
white ladies.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
We had Mrs. Trier, who played the piano, who was the pianist, and we had Rudolph Williams' father, who was Baptiste, Mr. Baptiste, who, yes, sort of ran everything. He was.
I read a letter he wrote, a little 2-page letter. That's really the only thing I've ever read about Good Shepherd.
Really?
John Baptiste, wasn't it?
Uh-huh, John Baptiste, who also ran the
funeral home.
Yeah.
Funeral home.
Yeah.
Were you and Horace a part of the congregation when the bishop refused to consecrate the new building? Which tell me a little bit about that. Was a difficult period for everybody, wasn't it?
Yes, because the bishop came over and had a meeting with us to find out how we felt about coming. It was not all that difficult for Horace and me because we didn't pay very much attention to integration or segregation or how people treated you, because we were sort of in another kind of world, you know, trying to make it, mm-hmm, and trying to bring people along with us and stuff, and dealing with segregation, you know, not making it, not letting it interfere with our lives. So when the bishop came, when they built the church and we were ready to move, well, we would have moved if that's what we were supposed to do, but he came to and said that you know, the Carnegies or whoever, you know, the church, the national church, wouldn't let it happen, and how we felt about going off to the other church, and we said it was all right. We were, that we didn't mind going, we weren't there for the people. We were there, you know, wherever we had to worship, we were, mm-hmm, Episcopalians, and this was our church, and if there were people who didn't want to sit next to you, it's their problem.
Their problem.
So forth. No.
I'd heard, Francis, that maybe half of the congregation of Good Shepherd either didn't want to join the white church or were fearful.
Most people, like Mrs. Troyer and the ladies who had certain positions, didn't want to give up those positions. They weren't fearful. I don't think they were fearful.
Okay.
They resented the fact that they had to give up she couldn't be the pianist,
okay,
and or the organist, and
okay,
and this lady couldn't do what she did,
uh-huh,
and you know, several key positions. Ray was one of them who was like
Ray. Which Ray?
Mercedes.
Oh yes, okay.
Mercedes Ray. She was, I think, sort of like the altar girl, you know, in charge. But she came up, and she was a member of this altar girl.
Okay.
But she was also working in St. Augustine, writing insurance, and they had their meeting on Saturday, and she couldn't get to the meeting, so they just took her name off, and
okay,
that kind of thing.
I've heard, I've talked with Father Gray,
mm-hmm,
not recently, but Father Gray used to say that some of the black people would come up to his back door after dark and sit and talk with him about this. I have no idea what their concerns were, but there were concerns, and Father had some concerns about the Ku Klux Klan.
Oh yeah,
they caused some problems here about this?
Not the blacks, not that I know of, but they did something to Father Gray. They threatened to close the church or something awful.
This church.
Yeah, they really harassed him.
I had heard that at least once when there was a black wedding in the church, that the Klan were lined up across the street when the people came out of the church. I never heard there was any violence, but there was harassment, I guess, names and, you know, threats perhaps. Mm-hmm. Do you remember any of that or
no,
any discussion about that?
I don't even remember whose wedding it was.
It may have happened more than once, but Father Gray was very emotional about that.
Oh, they gave him, you know, they talked to him or wrote him letters or whatever they did to him.
Mm-hmm.
They really put him
threatened
through.
Threatened him. Mm-hmm. Do you remember Father Ellisor?
He was here for just a little while. He had a speech. Was Ellisor the one who had the speech problem?
I don't know about that, but I do know that he did end up in a mental hospital. And I've heard people say the stress of all of this kind of thing, maybe the threats continued with him Father Gray. I don't know.
I don't either.
Did he follow Father Gray?
I thought he was. Came before him.
Before Father Gray. Okay. Okay. Well, when Bishop West came over and made the decision, then maybe Father Ellisor was the priest here at the time?
Maybe so. And then Father Gray came.
Yeah, I understand Father Ellisor did end up in some sort of a mental hospital for a while,
mm-hmm.
which,
Well, see, we didn't know that side of it because we're still, I guess, down there at the little church until we moved up.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember, but Horace and I didn't become involved in all that.
Do you remember hearing people talk about it, particularly the black people? And if so, what did they say? I don't need.
Well, the only thing, we didn't do a whole lot of talking to people about it. The only thing was that their actions, like Tommy Bird's mother was a staunch Episcopalian, and she decided that she and her family weren't going to go out there.
Were not going to go.
They were not. But they weren't afraid, they just didn't, they weren't going to go. And so they went to the Church of God or somewhere else. Most of them.
You think that it was just just didn't want to be told what to do? Was that part of it perhaps?
There were mean people up there who said a whole lot of things. For instance, the little children who were acolytes, there were people who would laugh at them, you know, not really knowing what to do, but in a strange situation. Knowing what to do, but just strange situation.
These were little black acolytes.
Little black acolytes. And they would be laughed at and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
John was too little. But then one thing that made me cry was the flowering of the cross when he was very little. There was in the bulletin for all little children to bring flowers to put on the cross, you know, that Sunday. And John got his little azaleas or whatever kind of flowers to put on the cross, and Ralph Wood was the superintendent of the Sunday school at that time, in charge of it. And John came with his little flowers up the aisle, and he was allowed to go up the aisle and put the flowers on, but he couldn't sit with the children. All the children sat in the front row, and he couldn't sit with the children. He had to come back and sit with us.
Oh.
And that made me so sad for him to be treated like that. That was the only thing that happened to us.
Just that you noticed. Well, now that leads me to ask you, did the blacks and the whites sit in separate sections of the church when they were there seats?
Yeah, well, I don't know whether they could sit wherever they wanted or not, but we were herded to the back rows, right, coming in right in the door. Yeah. Those first back rows, right?
Were the ones that black people sat in. Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, those were difficult times.
Oh, very difficult. But we lived through them. I've got to go to the bathroom.
Okay.
Could you turn?
I wanted to pick up on the comment about young John not being able to sit with the children. You mentioned that the rows in the back, where Mercedes' plaque is mm-hmm. about where the blacks sat. Mm-hmm. How long was it before blacks felt free to sit anywhere in the church? Do you remember that?
No, I don't, because I... It's been so long ago.
Uh-huh.
And... I think it just came naturally that if somebody sat in front. See, I became a member of the choir, so then I...
Okay.
And Horace was a lay reader.
Okay.
And I don't remember where he sat when I was in the choir, so...
Okay. Well, I was just curious as to how long that persisted.
I think perhaps when integration happened, that we could sit wherever we wanted. I don't think we were delegate before integration. Those two back rows were delegate, but we never did go up to church up there for anything before integration.
Okay.
We always
You know, integration happened at different times in different places. Mm-hmm. In 1954, Brown versus the school board was passed by the Supreme Court, and that was the beginning of the ending of separate but equal.
Mm-hmm.
But it took the communities a long time to adjust to that, and mm-hmm. it looks like that was probably going on at St. Peter's, because it was in the 60s when the old
68.
Church was closed. And that was 14 years after Brown versus, they were still asked Little John not to sit with the white
exactly.
children.
Exactly.
Yeah, okay.
Exactly.
Okay. The Emancipation Proclamation is very important to black people for obvious reasons. How did you and Horace and John celebrate that, if you did? That was January 1st.
I know. Emancipation Proclamation did me all that much to us to celebrate. It was good that it happened and all of that. And right now today, like, they have the celebration and we are a different kind of breed. Like, Emancipation Proclamation doesn't mean to me, or didn't mean to John, or I don't know what it means to John. I can't speak for John. But for Horace and me, it was fine, but it was not, it didn't mean a whole lot to us.
Okay. I can understand that. Do you remember times after you moved to Fernandina that there were work gangs who were prisoners who were picking up leaves and branches and things around town? I would guess guarded by police or the sheriff. Do you ever remember any of that?
No, okay. Because see, I lived in the old town for a while, and I lived out in Amelia City most of the time. Since 53, we've been out there.
Okay. Do you remember Sheriff Youngblood?
Oh, yeah.
Can you tell me some things about him, what he did that...
Well, he wasn't all that bad to us. People say a lot of bad things, but see, we didn't come in contact with with the sheriff or his deputies or that kind of thing.
Did you hear about people that did? Can you tell me any things that you heard happen to people?
Not on the Sheriff Youngblood so much. It seems to me, and what we did, I guess, was accepted the fact that Negroes were going to be treated harshly if they broke the law, more harshly, maybe. And I say maybe because that, yeah. And I don't know of any instances that he was such a terrible person. Not the way I can tell you about instances of this other sheriff that we had. What is his name? The last sheriff that we had.
Before Geiger.
Before Geiger.
And the one that went to prison.
Uh huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, Youngblood was, a lot of the black thought well of him. He had black deputies. And they thought the world of him when they worked in a segregated situation and I don't okay. remember any harsh stuff that he did.
Okay. Let me ask you now about the branch of the NAACP. I know that John L. was the president for a while, but can you tell me about their work in this community?
They used to do some very good work. They brought Julian Bond. I have some clippings of Julian Bond who came to speak for us.
Okay.
They didn't do much. What we thought they should do, you know, when we had problems, they couldn't solve them. And that, you know, just mm-hmm. when John L. was connected with it, they just raised money and sent the kids to. Or send somebody to some convention. That's the biggest thing that they've done. The most work that they have done was through with Pat. She done a whole lot of good. But in my mind, the NAACP didn't accomplish a whole
okay.
lot.
What kinds of problems come to mind? Did the black people have to tend with in the community or the county?
Oh, they had, just a lot of segregation, a lot of, you can't drink from this fountain, or you can't use this bathroom and things like that, but that was everywhere, so we didn't.
Nothing unique,
you okay. know.
Do you remember when this began to change and you could go?
Well, that was after 68. See, we were in the school teaching business, and we really got it there, mm-hmm. you know, at before integration. At board meetings, at school board meetings, we had to attend the board meetings, and we had to sit in the back, and heaven help you, they had to go to the bathroom, you know, and stuff mm-hmm. like that. You couldn't drink from the fountain, you know, things like that. And in some of the stores, when you bought something and had to pay for it, and got changed back, the people would throw the money at you. All kinds of little subtle, mm-hmm. terrible things mm-hmm. happen to you. But I guess you learn to be hard, and just this was everywhere.
Just take it.
Yeah.
Do you remember any particular time back in those days when things really did begin to change, or was it gradual?
It was gradual.
Gradual.
Yes. It was gradual.
Okay.
Very gradual, you know. We had, it was a slow process.
Okay. As I say, the law, Supreme Court made the law in 1954. And, well, you know, the marches and so forth in Selma, they were in the 60s, so it did take time.
Yeah.
And, of course, the move, the Good Shepherd closing and so forth was right in that period.
Mm-hmm.
So it was after that that people in Fernandina, black people, began to have an opportunity to mingle in restaurants and use water fountains.
That's
and so
right.
Forth. Did you ever have any experiences with any of that? Were you ever embarrassed at drinking in a fountain you shouldn't have? Or?
No, because we never did put ourselves. You see, you put yourself, you don't put yourself in the position to have to. You just wait until you got home or wait.
Yeah.
And so.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay. What do you remember about the outside of Fernandina into the county? Were those people, did they have more oppression out there than in the city? Were there differences? Did people talk about Yulee or Hilliard or Callahan as being a particularly difficult area for them as opposed to here in the community?
Yulee was really a very, see, I taught in Yulee.
Okay.
So I know more about Yulee than
okay.
I do Fernandina.
Okay.
And that was a unique community. I don't know that they associated with the blacks so much as we weren't tied to the school. We had a little isolated school on this where the elementary school is now.
Okay.
Used to be a Bryant Academy.
Okay.
A little black school that was it was unique because it served Sand Hill and Lassie and those places the children were bussed in, and all those parents stuck together, and it was a different world. They really worked with the teachers and the principals, and it was really nice to work out there because it was a unique situation. We didn't have large classes, and we could do what we could, anything we wanted to do with the children, and we of course worked hard to prepare them to come to the city, which
mm-hmm.
was Fernandina Beach, and
this little school was a black school you're talking about.
Yeah, I'm talking about the black school, the black community.
Did you caution the children about how to get along with white children? Did those?
Well, no, I was not out there then.
Oh, I see. Okay.
When integration came about. I think the children were prepared from Peck to the high school.
Teachers did what they could
teachers
to prepare
did,
them,
yeah.
Sure. Okay.
And I was the only, when they had to integrate the schools, they moved me. I was the only black teacher to come from Yulee over to the elementary school on Atlantic Avenue. And the teachers did a wonderful job in preparing the children for me, and I was the only one. Thelma Shepherd was the only teacher. We integrated the schools. Thelma Shepherd went to the high school, and I was placed there.
How did the teachers treat you, the white teachers?
Wonderfully.
No problem.
They were no problem at all.
Yeah, okay.
Well, I had a good supervisor, Mr. Webb, who worked with them, I think, and I had no problem. I had no race problem at all,
okay.
Except with one little girl. One little girl's parents lived in Old Town, and I used to spank the children. That was my
good
big thing. That was the way I was taught to discipline.
Mm-hmm.
My discipline. And this teacher, I came over here teaching fourth grade, and in the locker room, she had left a little paddle that she called Heat for the Sea. Well, I was reluctant to come to integrate the schools because of the fact that I used to paddle. I used to teach little little children, and, you know, we used to have, I had my own little way of doing things. And I said, well, I was not going to change my way of teaching at all for any of them, you know. I was going to paddle these children over here when they were bad. So I had this problem with this one little girl from Old Town, whose the mother sent a message about if I hit her child, what she was going to do. But then I didn't have to paddle the girls. I paddled the boys every day.
Yeah.
But the boys are my love. I love little boys.
Yeah.
And I think it should be that. But then I told this little girl that, that, you know, I wasn't going to touch her. I wasn't going to paddle her. If she misbehaved, she was going to, I was going to sit right there until the sun went down, or she was going to have to walk home. Mm-hmm. And she was not going to go on the bus and something. I didn't have any trouble out of her either.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
But I had no trouble out of the children or all the teachers. So.
Oh, well, that's wonderful. Well, I'm pleased to hear that. The last thing I have, I'm probably going to be running out of tape. That's okay. Were you involved in what I understand was called ORITA, O-R-I-T-A, the coming of age of black children? Kind of like maybe bar mitzvah for Jewish. Did you ever hear any of that?
No.
Okay, I don't know much about it, but I read about it a little bit, and I wondered if anybody here in this community took the children through the passing of rite. You know?
No, okay. I don't know okay. about that.
I'm going to turn this over for a minute and just ask you if there's anything else that you think of that you want to tell me, and then we'll be finished. Ask you now if there's anything else you can think of that you would like to share with me that relates to how things were from the time you got here until now, about good black people in Nassau County, Old Town, Fernandina, outside, Yulee.
No, nothing comes to mind that you could use to advantage. I found that the black people were still inclined to segregate themselves, and they still do. I don't know why that is. Horace and I never did. We didn't segregate or try to integrate. We were just thrown into whatever part we were in,
mm-hmm.
and tried to make our community a better place in which to live.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily race-wise, but just people-wise.
Mm-hmm.
Just informing, working with youth and informing the people and sharing and so forth and so on. We found the people of Fernandina sort of clannish. They don't particularly trust outsiders, and I use that word trust loosely. I don't know whether it's trust or whether they invite you into their situation, but that is a mori of islanders.
Mm-hmm.
We found that, Francis, when we came here. Just it took us a while before people opened up to us.
Right. Well, that's what we found. And right now, they claim John, because see, John was born in Savannah, but he was just born in Savannah. Mm-hmm. He was raised here, so sure. Then they said, John, you're one of us,
yeah.
Which is unique, you know. But they loved Horace.
Yes.
And I get along with them very fine. But they liked Horace better than they liked me, and I don't know whether that was because because Horace taught in Peck, and that was a big family in like Fernandina,
mm-hmm.
And I taught at ULE, and people at ULE know me. So you know, I don't know why that is. Now Horace was a loving kind of person anyway. So you know,
I'm going to ask in a moment just a little family history, and I'll let you go. That will give me Horace's birth date and that kind of information. One last thought I had is, do you know anything about the Harrison plantation history?
No.
Because you're fairly close to it down there.
Just when I was told, you know, when I taught fourth grade, we would visit around, and I knew the Pankish who lived right there, and but then that was before my time, but you know, and I was told this and I was told that.
Okay.
But I don't know.
Okay, how about the Franklin Town Cemetery? Do you know anything about that?
Only what you talk to Julius Stewart.
Julius Stewart.
He calls me every now and then and tells me something about Franklin Town.
Okay.
And about that cemetery.
Okay.
Julius Stewart.
Well, I have his name on tape, so I certainly will call him.
All right.
Okay, well, Francis, I thank you. This has been wonderful. I'm going to stop.